Hi, sweet beans. Welcome back to Wild Geese. I'm your host, Anna. This week, I want to talk about reconnecting with our sense of play and maybe kind of like reparenting our inner child. It is my birthday today, so it feels apropos to be thinking of childhood and play and fun and getting reconnected with that part of myself. I feel like I have started to take myself a little bit too seriously lately, so I'm ready for a breath of fresh air. I think that this conversation around inner child work goes beyond the individual reflection that I see people talk about in like the self-care sphere all the time of like, you know, do things that you used to love as a child, do a meditation and like picture who you were as a child and like hug her, you know, that kind of thing. I think that all of those things are worth doing, but I've been thinking about it beyond individual reflection and actually thinking more systemically, I think, of like, what is the relationship between an adult and a child, a caretaker and a person being cared for, a teacher and a learner? And how can we think about getting those two positions on more equal footing so that we're not, like, by design planting insecurities of not enoughness in childhood? And the thing that really got me thinking down this path was that this past week, I had what I can only describe as like a full-blown meltdown over this fear that I have that I'm actually quite dumb and I've just been just quiet enough to convince people otherwise so far. And I think that this fear has made me less fun. It's made me quieter at parties. It's like taken away a bit of my personality in the way that I present in these episodes. Like if I go back and listen to old episodes before I really had an audience, I was much goofier and like just more uninhibited in my expression. And in reflecting on why I feel that way, I can like pretty quickly point back to moments in my childhood that made me feel dumb, right? Like I never quite caught on with math. I still count on my fingers to this day. I took mostly regular classes, like not advanced classes, while my brother took like the hardest classes possible. You know, I could go on and on about things that have kind of planted a little worm in my brain that tells me that I'm actually quite dumb. And I think this particular insecurity is starting to pop its head up because now I've got a microphone in my hand. And when you have a microphone in your hand, it is sort of this like position of authority that I'm frankly giving myself. But there is an expectation to have a certain level of expertise. So it feels like stepping into this moment of adulthood that I, when I was younger, pictured myself reaching this point of like all-knowingness before ever doing anything like this. So I think I've started to become a bit fascinated by teachers and the way that they feel teaching a bunch of people, like the ownership that you have to feel over what you're teaching and the imposter syndrome that comes up with that. Speaking of learning and teaching, thank you to Brilliant for sponsoring this video. Brilliant helps you become a better thinker and problem solver with thousands of visual and interactive lessons in math, science, programming, and data analysis. As I was just saying, math was never my strong suit in school, and if someone tried to teach me math through a lecture, they might as well have been ranting to a wall. But Brilliant is a learning app that uses methods that are proven to be 6 times more effective than lecture videos. I've been taking Brilliant's visual algebra course as a little bit of a personal challenge to myself. And listen, while I do still count on my fingers, I am starting to understand mental math in a way that I never have before. As a visual and tactile learner, I love how hands-on each lesson is. It has the perfect mix of engaging problems, competitive features, and daily encouragement that keeps you motivated and on track. And speaking of what it takes to be a good teacher, all content on Brilliant is crafted by an award-winning team of teachers, researchers, and professionals from MIT, Google, Stanford, Microsoft, and more. To learn for free on Brilliant, go to brilliant.org/Anna Howard, scan the QR code on screen, or click the link in the episode description. Brilliant's also given my viewers 20% off of an annual premium subscription, which gives you unlimited daily access to everything on Brilliant. And I picked up this book, Syllabus by Linda Barry. I picked it up because I had heard people equate it to The Artist's Way, and The Artist's Way never quite worked for me. I mean, parts of it did, but I have never gone through The Artist's Way. And I just heard that this was a more flexible, fun approach. And basically, Linda Barry is a cartoonist that has taught art and writing classes at a university, and she just put her entire syllabus with her entire notebook into a book. So it's all illustrated just absolutely beautifully, and there are exercises throughout the book that she does with her class. And I read this in a day, and I've already picked up some of the exercises. But on the front cover, there's this little illustration of this little creature, and inside of it, it says, "Who is the teacher?" So after reading the book, I was looking into Linda Barry a little bit more because quite frankly, I'm a bit obsessed with her now. And I realized that she is the cartoonist that did this comic. And if you're listening to the audio only version, it looks like two creatures are walking around a museum. One of them looks to be an adult and one of them looks to be a child. And they're looking at a painting of what appears to be an adult holding a child. And in the first box, the adult says, "I'm not sure how to look at art." And the child says, "What's supposed to happen?" And the adult says, "Something big, a revelation. Suddenly you just understand. Not sure how to make it happen." And the child says, "How about lift me up so I can see better?" And then in the last slide, it's the adult holding the child, looking at the image of the adult holding the child, and suddenly they've become a mirror to the artwork. And what I love about this image, I've seen this comic so many times before I ever knew anything about Linda Barry, but what I love about it is that they're both unsure. It kind of does away with this expectation that the adult knows more than the child. And actually, it's the child that has the idea of being lifted and the adult that has the capacity to lift. I actually just texted a friend who's a pediatric occupational therapist looking for some resources because this is her whole area of expertise. And she sent me some things that I'm excited to look over. And she says, "Play is a practiced skill. You may be born with the ability to feel fun and enjoyment, but you have to learn to play. And it's an important milestone of childhood development and a skill you can continue to grow and practice." And when she said that, I was like, damn, I've never thought about play as a skill. Like, obviously, you need to get like the fine motor skills and that sort of thing. But I never really thought of it as a skill to return to, even though it is this like the feeling of like fun and silliness and goofiness is like a feeling that you can remind yourself to tap into. It's kind of a new way to think about it for me, for play to be a skill versus like playfulness as a fixed state of your personality. And I think it's a skill that we as adults obviously deprioritize in the name of efficiency. And the syllabus has a section about an activity that Linda did with her students where she gave them pretty specific instructions. And the end result actually meant that they didn't enjoy the activity as much as they had a few years prior, when the only real instructions she gave were to spend time on the assignment. This year, she had gotten a lot more specific with like how much pressure to put on their crayon and like how densely they should be filling the page with color. She says, "By telling them just how to do it, I took the playing around away. The gradual figuring out that brings something alive to the activity, makes it worthwhile, and is transferable to other activities. I've gone through the same cycle with my own work, always losing what I master." And then she addresses her students in a really lovely way. She says, "You helped me to remember to forget the fastest way to do it, the most efficient way to do it." And I love that wording, "You helped me to remember to forget." And that's really the gift that children can give, or even like bringing it out of the like parent-child, teacher-child relationship, a beginner can give to anything, is this reminder to like be flexible and throw out the rules. But we have to respect the beginner in order to catch those reminders that they're throwing our way. And there's a Substack essay called "If We're Lucky, We Never Become Good Humans" by Pax in their newsletter, Inner Cartographies. And they say, "As much as I'm invested in helping adult humans heal their inner child / inner teenage hurts, I'm equally as invested in the liberation of all children. How we treat children is how we treat ourselves. And on a planet where children are one of the most controlled populations on Earth, we treat ourselves like shit. Children, from the time they're born, are simultaneously objectified, sexualized, infantilized, and treated as non-human, agentless things. We praise them for growing up, but never praise them for being the brilliant, imaginative kids they are. And children internalize this. So much of the work I do with adults is helping them regain that sense of wonder again, the boldness to imagine a different world, the willful remembering of the dreams carried within our bodies. I know, as equally as all humans long to love and be loved, we also long to be free. We miss ourselves. We miss the way we used to be. Often we oppress what has the possibility of liberating us. In other words, when we don't process our own shit, the things we secretly crave, the freedom we long to embody, we police it in others and ourselves." Oof, that line that says we miss ourselves, didn't I literally say that earlier in this episode, that I watch old episodes of Wild Geese and I miss her? And that was the me from a year ago. Pax goes on to say, "Children are a vital piece of our liberation, not because they are the future, not because they are vulnerable. These are both true, but also a part of how we objectify them and deny them the presence of simply being kids. They are vital because they are kids, because they know exactly how to do liberation. They know how to open their hearts. They know how to question social norms and systems that we adults rarely stop to think about." And look, none of this is meant to be used as justification for going and shaming parents and teachers and whatnot. Everybody is doing the best they can with the information that they have. Okay, I'm amending this because not everyone is doing the best that they can, and some people actually do neglect and abuse children. And in those situations, obviously, we need to be addressing that and calling that out and doing what we can to help the children in those situations. But I have also heard that there is a real problem with people shaming parents for the way that they decide to parent, and I would hate for this episode to be used as an opportunity to perpetuate that. If we want to rethink our relationship with children, I think that starts on a personal level in the way that you personally engage with children, not by casting judgment and giving unsolicited advice to caretakers. But one of the ways Pax talks about deconstructing these hierarchies is that they say that anytime that they're in a group of people, and it's like adults and children, and a child is trying to say something, and usually like the norm is to keep talking to the adults and kind of tell the child like, okay, wait, be respectful, sweetie, like don't talk right now, the adults are talking, like instead to actually turn your full attention to the child and pay attention to what they have to say and prioritize their voice. And even like, I'll call myself out here. The last time that I went home and I spent time with my 2-year-old niece, I remember at one point we were all like at the dinner table and I was talking about something that she had done earlier in the day as if she wasn't there. Like I was fully talking about her as if she wasn't a human being that was in the room. And at one point she started to respond to what I was saying. And of course she's 2. So it's like, I can't always totally understand what she's saying. And her mom kind of has to translate for me. And I'm pretty sure what I was saying was like, it's crazy that she actually knows stuff. Like she has a brain. But even in me saying that, and then my niece like interjecting because she was understanding that I was talking about her, her mom was like, Anna, she knows what you're saying. Like, you can speak to her. But that's such a small moment that I can see compounding if it's like all of the adults in your life are treating you as if you're not an autonomous, sentient person in the room with them. I could see that being internalized. So all that to say, just like calling myself out, that there are big, like egregious moments where we disrespect children's autonomy and devalue their sense of play. And then there's also little tiny micro moments that we can so easily make our conditioning their problem. And obviously treating children like they're stupid has a ripple effect throughout their lives as adults, but also as the adult, it strips away our ability to learn anything from their point of view. Pax's essay says, I'd rather dream of someone who still believes other worlds can exist. When I tell them about racism or how women are often treated differently, they openly question it because they can't imagine a world where everyone isn't treated with love and care. Kids don't understand war, not because they don't know how the world works. They don't understand it because it's unreasonable to them. They know there are other options. So anyway, that's maybe my very long-winded way of making a case for valuing play and respecting children so that we can learn from their perspectives and also respect that part of ourselves when it shows up. And the other day I went to Governor's Island for this little like fall festival thing that they were having. And on Governor's Island, there's this playground that looks like kind of just a big pile of junk, but it looks super fun. It reminded me of that movie, Harriet the Spy. It's been so long since I've seen this movie, so I could be remembering it totally incorrectly. But I just remember there was like a garden scene that looked like the garden was kind of filled with junk that was very artfully placed. And it's always stuck in my head. And that's kind of what the playground at Governor's Island looked like. And at its entrance, there was a sign that kind of laid the groundwork for the space. And I want to read it to you because I think it's such a cool way to make space for children's play and kind of reimagine the playground as we know it. So it says, "Welcome to the yard. This is a special place devoted to young people's play. We invite you to take a minute to observe, learn, and remember your own childhood. When were you happiest? How did you play? Play is what young people want to do whenever their basic needs are met. Play is how they make sense of the world. Play is sometimes thought of as a set of behaviors that are freely chosen, intrinsically motivated, personally directed, and done for their own sake. Our society has achieved many things, but we also face some pretty big hurdles, and we are often not very friendly to our youngest members. This sets them up to be more susceptible for more mistreatment or to mistreat others. We at Playground NYC want to offer space and time for young people to be in charge of their decisions with support from caring, playful adults. Playwork is the professional title we use for this practice. The adults you see inside the yard supporting young people are play workers. We also want to encourage parents, educators, and any adult in contact with young people to figure out ways you can support them. It might mean going slower, listening and connecting more, allowing for a mess, following young people's leads, remembering that mistakes are part of learning. We fell so many times while learning how to walk. Remembering that young people are just as smart, they just have less experience and their bodies are still growing. Being willing to act foolishly, playing more. You might even feel better about your own life following these invitations." And I think part of why I'm feeling so obsessed with Linda Berry right now is because it seems like she really understands that last part about how following those invitations might actually make your own life better. Like, yes, she is an adult in an authority position. She is a teacher, but she's also approaching all of her lessons with a lesson that she wants to learn from her students. She's running these classes like experiments. Like, she goes into them with these specific questions that she wants to answer for herself by working with these students. It's not an approach that says, hey, I'm the teacher now. Hey, I'm the adult now. I know everything and here it is. Throughout this entire book, she's asking questions and then telling us what lesson plan she's putting together in order to answer these questions for herself. So the very first page has a bunch of questions on it. It says, is creative concentration contagious? How have visual images of the brain influenced the way we think about thinking? What do ideas look like when they're taking physical shape? These are all questions that she wants to know the answer to, and she feels the best way of finding them is by working with beginners. She says throughout the book that she's most interested in working with people who quit drawing a long time ago. And I listened to an interview where she was talking about how she had been teaching writing for a while, but she was actually pretty hesitant to teach cartoon style drawing because she said, I never developed that really fast, rapid, at-ease cartoonist style. For me, when I draw, it's sometimes as if I've never drawn before. And so I was worried that people were going to look at my drawing and go, oh, that's a nice dream, sweetie. And this is coming from an established, famous cartoonist. And I think that coming at it with this experimental, fun, playful approach can actually be a way that we can address some of those insecurities of whatever our quote-unquote shortcomings are. Like, instead of letting that insecurity stop her from teaching the class entirely, she decided to use it as an invitation and an opportunity to lower the barrier to entry to people that don't feel like they're good enough to draw at all. And this reminded me of something that Jamila Bradley was talking about on TikTok, asking, why can't growth be fun? When we think about like fun and experimentation, so often we're thinking about things that we're trying to relegate to a younger part of our lives. And a lot of the times it's things that we anticipate needing to restrict later on in our lives. I remember being in college and being told by a professor, now's the time while you're in your 20s to go and get crazy, aka drink, I don't know, fall in love with the wrong people, all of that. And then once you're in your 30s, it's time to get serious. And that quote unquote getting serious can so often look like restricting yourself from the things that you used to do for fun. And Jamila says, why don't we experiment with celibacy? Why don't we experiment with sobriety? Why don't we ever experiment with cooking vegetarian food at home? Largely, the things we'll be experimenting with are things we'll have to restrict ourselves from later in life. Think substances, think partying, travel, adventure, etc. And underneath this mindset is a real loss of our aliveness, of a sense of purpose, play, and fun when we're doing things that may actually benefit us in the long run. Imagine what a mindset shift it would be if someone knew they were struggling with alcohol, for example, and decided to experiment with sobriety a few days a week. So much of our life is based on this idea that we have to endure the things that we need. And then they ask the question, like, what if it could actually be fun to do the things that we have in mind to feel better in our body, in our lives, whatever it is? I think of those videos that are like, it's time to lock in what we're doing this season to lock in, whatever. And it's like, what does lock in even mean? Whatever it means, it doesn't sound very fun to me. And Jamila says, we all deserve a version of ourselves that actually likes the process of transformation, that likes the changing and the maturity that we catalyze. Because honestly, I think it's one of the most inherent and beautiful parts of our autonomy that we can express in this world, the choice to be different in service of our own pleasure, of our own capacity for joy. And I think Linda Berry's class is just a perfect example of this in action, of like approaching the things that you want to do, but maybe you're a bit scared, you're a bit insecure about it, with a spirit of experimentation. And I realized I kind of did this already before I was even thinking in the direction of this episode. If you listen back to the last episode, I was talking about experimenting with not consuming media online. And I did really approach that as an experiment. And what that did was it took that weight of shame that so often blankets our pursuit of a quote unquote, like better life. It like took that and threw it out the window so that I experimented with it for a few days. I documented my takeaways. I valued the experiment. And with that approach, it doesn't feel like a failure that I didn't like completely heal my addiction to my phone in a week. But this mindset of experimentation is also something that I want to bring into what I'm creating. I think that there is a certain risk aversion that comes up after you have found something that works in some way, of like, well, I need to just like continue doing what works because I know what works. And I think that that's like adulthood in a nutshell, of like, no, I have my ideas of what works. So playing with other options is really not safe for me to do. And what that looks like for me right now is like I know that showing up here once every 2 weeks works for me. The idea of adding on more things that sound really fun, but may not work, is freaky. Because I'm not just thinking of the idea of maybe failing at something new, that I really don't have as much stake in that game. It's the risk of then, because you've added on more things to play around with and have fun with, then failing at the things that you already know how to do. Like, for example, when I had already been doing Wild Geese for a while, and then I decided to start a Substack, and it was really just an experimental thing, there was part of me that was like, oh no, am I doing too much? Am I going to drive myself into creative burnout? Like, that has always been a real danger in my mind, when actually, in retrospect, it's more accurate to think about, like, any time that I have run into burnout, it's actually more about not giving myself enough room to play with new mediums, new ways of expressing myself. Burnout and boredom often feel like they're in lockstep for me. And now it's like the idea of vlogging sounds really fun, but there's this space in between thinking about it and doing it where the logistical adult part of myself really takes over and is like, all right, well, if I dedicate X number of hours to this, then that takes away X numbers of hours from the other thing. And like really getting locked in an analytical mode of thinking. So I think when I start to feel myself get really stuck in that logical place in my brain, that's like trying to project 5 months out and see if this thing that I want to do is going to serve a purpose, or if it's going to take away from the thing that's working, whatever. When I get stuck there, it's helpful to me to think about setting aside intentional time to play. And part of what makes play play is that it's not supposed to serve a purpose. So that's why it's like pretty valuable to me to think of doing things that we have not historically thought of ourselves as being good at, or we haven't received a bunch of praise for. Because first of all, it can make you kind of come in contact with that shame. And it kind of does away with that like worm in your brain that's telling you to monetize all of your hobbies. This will look really different for everyone based on what you enjoy doing. But I think having playtime set aside where you're doing things that you enjoy doing and get you in a flow state, but you're not so good at them that you're constantly thinking about, how can I make money from this? Or how is this taking away from the thing that is making me money? And another way to think about approaching things with an experimental mindset is to just think about playing pretend. Like, I used to love to play pretend, and it wasn't always like fun pretend games either. I was like, part of me being silly and goofy is also me being kind of intense. Like, I remember playing pretend with a friend, and I think we were pretending to like be a married couple or something. And at one point, she like stops the game and she was like, Anna, you know, we're pretending, right? And I was like, yeah, I guess that's the actor in me. Anyway, that is such a side tangent, but I kind of do feel like there's a lot of merit to the idea of like creating an alter ego for yourself. And if you need to like create an alter ego and step into that alter ego in order to give yourself permission to take creative risks and fuck around, then do it. I know for some people, the idea of like creating experiments that they can run is really fun. For me, the idea of playing pretend and creating little characters is really fun. So like, for example, if I wanted to play around with vlogging for a while, but vlogging is bringing up some insecurities about like being seen as vain or whatever it is that comes up, then I can create an alter ego version of myself that is a vlogger. I can play pretend every day of my life if I want to. So much of the art making process and the like reconnecting with your inner child process requires you to come in contact with your shame. But who were we before we were told that the only things worth doing were the things that we were good at? There's a reason why this podcast is named after Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. One thing that I have found to be the most like surefire way for me to get into like a playful spirit that sits right at the intersection of things that get me into like a flow state, having a lot of fun, and things that I haven't necessarily been praised for being the best at, is improv classes. I would genuinely suggest improv classes to anyone. I really don't care if you feel like this is cringy, if you feel like you're not a person who can perform, whatever. I would challenge you to step out of your comfort zone and do it, because improv is all about having fun, playing games, staying in the moment. And it's now been at least a year, I think, since I've taken an improv class, and I'm feeling itchy to do it again. Like, I really need to get back in there. It also just will make you a better, more fun conversationalist. Every conversation is more fun when you know how to yes and. And again, I don't even think that I'm particularly good at improv. Anytime that I've done an improv performance, I have not invited any of my friends or family to come see it, because That's not really what I do it for. I genuinely just think it's such a fun thing that leaves me feeling more alive afterwards. And I think we just can't discount how important it is to seek out those things that are really fun to us, because Sarah Schauer actually made a great TikTok video about how fun is a combination of feelings and emotions and experiences, and it's most associated with feeling alive. And they were saying how in this day and age, everyone's talking about how they feel dead inside, and how actually every time that you say, I feel like I'm too old to do that, I feel too old to have fun, I feel too old to play, I feel too old to learn, they say when you say those things, you are actually advancing your subjective age, which is different than your biological age. And what you're doing is you're essentially emotionally decaying.
Like, when's the last time that you decided to do something just because it sounded like a funny thing to do? Like, I'm talking full-on side quests that are just an inside joke with yourself. For me, it's been a really long time since I've done something like this, and I've been thinking about this Twitter post of this person that made this ridiculous mug with a handle that was, like, incredibly long for no reason, and they just captioned it, "Mug I made," and someone responded, "There are so many instances of archaeologists puzzling over particularly confusing artifacts, which were made by some guy doing pretty much this." I think we're so conditioned to think that the only way that we should be spending our time is in a way that, like, produces some sort of value for other people. And maybe sometimes you're spending your time in a way that is valuable to you because it makes you giggle a little bit. And there's a screenshot of a comment from a Reddit thread that I found on Tumblr. Wow, what a sentence. But it says, "I think creativity always lives somewhere in everyone, but its nature is quite pranksterish and slippery. And every time you grab its tail, it's found a new corner to thrive in. Perhaps the trick is not to force it and put it up against a wall and want it to be in a particular area, but rather, with a lot of kindness, sniff it out and wonder where it has gone this time. If it's in sauce recipes, writing theater plays, papier-mâché, improv with nephews, discovering new hiking routes, or simply trying to figure out a family member's sense of humor. I def don't succeed in this all the time, but feel overall things have been more fertile when I trust this creature's instincts and follow it rather than me willfully reforming it into a circus animal coloring by numbers. Anyways, as much as you'd like to ignore this animal, you have to attend to it, because if you don't, dark times turn up." And I love this image of our creative energy being this, like, super pranksterish being that we have to sniff out. And in order to sniff it out, we have to be pranksterish and random and fun and goofy and silly to find it again. I feel like I've kind of surrounded myself lately with people who have more of this, like, pranksterish, silly, goofy energy than I do, where they can just, like, kind of make up a game on the spot. Like, the other night I was going to a Halloween party, and before we went, one of the people that I was with had a Pokemon costume on. I don't really know enough about Pokemon to even tell you what the character was. But another person I was with got out a piece of construction paper and just cut out a very random shape that sort of looked like it could maybe be a creature, and handed it to the guy that was wearing the Pokemon costume and told him to go up to the host, who he knew also was obsessed with Pokemon, and try to get the host to guess what Pokemon character it was, even though it wasn't a Pokemon character, which is such a fun, silly, harmless prank. I think sometimes when we think of pranks, we think of, like, mean shit, but it can also just be goofy and pointless in pursuit of a little giggle.
So I don't know. All that to say, if you are like me and you feel like you are taking yourself and your life too seriously lately, it is actually serious, important work to address that. It's not something to be pushed off because you have more quote unquote serious responsibilities. So I will be getting my ass back in an improv class, and who knows, if you see me in person, I might be dressed like a princess because I'm playing pretend as a princess for the day. God, let me just prioritize silly, goofy bullshit, because it's not bullshit at all. Anyway, that's all I have for you today. I do actually think that I am going to be experimenting more with vlogging over on Instagram instead of keeping it on this channel. So if you would like more vlogging content from me, I'm going to be pretending that I'm a vlogger over on Instagram if you want to follow me there. All right, I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Love you. Bye.